Good evening. I think we ought to take up a little further work on the subject of healing and how healing is accomplished in the infinite way. Now, you must understand that metaphysical or spiritual healing has as many different modes and methods as, let us say, Materia Medica. They have allopathy, and they have homeopathy, and they have osteopathy, all different forms of Materia Medica, each one differing from the other. And so in the metaphysical and spiritual healing worlds, there are different methods, entirely different from each other. There are people like the evangelists who have received by the grace of God some special state of consciousness through which they heal without knowing at all how or why or wherefore. In fact, none of them have the slightest idea of how healings are performed, except that they know they do take place, sometimes through oral talks that are given, other times through laying on of hands. But it is nothing over which they have any control. It is something that is a part of their makeup, something that has come to them at some particular part of their life. Then in the metaphysical world, there are many different systems. That of unity, which differs perhaps from any other of the metaphysical movements. That of divine science, which is much like Christian science. That of the divine science and Christian science. And then mind science, religious science, which are primarily mental sciences. So that there is no one thing called either metaphysical healing or spiritual healing. There are many different healings. And so it is that in the infinite way, we also have a mode or method or means of healing which differs from all of the others. If you have any experience with other forms of metaphysical healing and want to do healing through the infinite way, you have to unlearn most of what you have known in order to grasp these principles. And if you have any difficulty, it is probably because you have not unlearned enough. And this I would like to make clear to you. To begin with, let us start with God and spiritual creation and, if you have not yet experienced it, you will someday if you stayed on this path. There is no imperfection in any part of God or God's creation, none whatsoever. God is absolute perfection, perfect being, and so is all of God's creation. No one was ever born in God's creation, and no one will ever die, because no one ever began and no one will ever end. The only way you will ever understand this is through the word I. When you close your eyes and say I, you are identifying a part of you which has no knowledge of birth or death. This I, or your identity, is actually an identity in and of and with God, coexists with God, and is the eternal part of your being. It is that part of your being which has existed for billions of years and will continue to exist without interruption for many more billions of years. In fact, as long as there is God, there will be a you, because I and my Father are one and not two. I and my Father, the I which I am and the I which God is one and the same I. And therefore, I am immortal. Now, very often when you think of immortality, you think of your life beyond the grave. But you do not stop to realize that if immortality is truth, it must mean your life before you were born. You can't have a life begin and then become immortal. Immortality is from everlasting to everlasting, without beginning and without end. In other words, you can no more imagine God having begun than you can imagine God ending. And if I and God are one, you can certainly see that I, in that oneness, have never begun and will never end. My identity, and this means yours, your identity remains intact, spiritual, perfect, not only after the grave, but it was so before you were born. It is for this reason that when you hear the tape, a parenthesis in eternity, you will catch the idea that your life from the cradle to the grave is a period that you are living in a parenthesis. But when you remove the parenthesis, you have the entire circle of immortality. In other words, while you may only know yourself in this parenthesis from birth to death, actually, it is possible for that parenthesis to be removed, and you become aware of yourself and of your true identity as the entire circle of life, immortality, eternality. And you can do this only through that word I. Once you can realize I, separate and apart from personality, separate and apart from a physical body, I, incorporeal spiritual I, you will have the secret of the eternality, the immortality of life, without beginning, without birth, without ending, without death. Now, since I, the I that God is and the I that I am, is one, you can understand that the infinite perfection of God is the infinite perfection of my being. Son, thou art ever with me. The I of you is with the I of me. And all that I have is thine. Now, this doesn't refer to dollar bills. This does not refer to bank accounts. All that I have is thine means all of the immortality, all of the spirituality, all of the spiritual integrity, all of the life, all the perfection, all of the wholeness, holiness, all that is of God is of you, me, I. Because the I of me and the I of God is one and the same I, and all of the qualities of God are the qualities of spiritual, eternal, immortal man. Now, this is your premise in your infinite way healing work. And if you want to heal, you must first of all remind yourself of this truth. You must first of all be conscious of the fact that the I of me and the I of God is one. And all that constitutes the I which is God constitutes the I which is me, for I and the Father of one. All of the immortality, eternality, spiritual perfection, harmony, peace, justice, infinity, eternality, all that is of God is of me, for I and the Father are one. Now, when you have established yourself in that spiritual truth, the next point is, but what about this sin? What about this disease? What about this false appetite? What about this lack or limitation? What about this unemployment? What about this lost baggage? Now, think for a minute what you have just declared about God and your spiritual selfhood. And you will be better enabled to understand that whatever appears contrary to that infinite perfection which you have declared exists not as a part of God's creation. This must be your first remembrance. This is where you take your entire departure from all orthodox religion. If you do not, you might as well stay with your Orthodox Church, because once you enter this consciousness, you can never again believe that God sends sin or disease or temptation or poverty to anyone for any reason, not even to punish them for their wrongdoings. Never again can you accept any evil as emanating from God? Not for any reason. As you study the message of the infinite way, you will learn where the evil comes and how it comes. You will learn the nature of karmic law. Karmic law, as it is called in the Orient, or as ye sow, so shall ye reap, as it is called in the Christian Bible. Remember that the Master explained to his followers where sin, disease, and death come from. And remember that his teaching has been removed from the Orthodox Church so that you can't find it there. But it does exist there. And this is what it says. As ye sow, so shall ye reap. If you sow to the flesh, you will reap corruption. If you sow to the Spirit, you will reap life everlasting. If you abide in the Word and let the Word abide in you, you will bear fruit richly. If you do not abide in the Word and let the Word abide in you, you will be as a branch of a tree that is cut off, withereth, and dies. It is very, very clear that we are every moment of every day determining what our tomorrows will be. as ye sow in this moment, so will you reap tomorrow, next week, next year, or 10 years from now. Now, even where this is brought forth, it is very often interpreted to mean that if you are obeying the Ten Commandments, that you are sowing good and will reap good, and if you are disobeying the Ten Commandments, that you are sowing to the flesh and you will reap corruption, and this is utter nonsense. It has no such meaning whatsoever. The meaning is this. If you are abiding in the spiritual truth of being, you will reap the harmony. You are sowing spiritually and you will reap spiritually. But if you are accepting the world's belief in two powers, if you are accepting the world belief in spirit and matter, if you are accepting the world belief in good and evil, then you're going to experience good and evil. So actually, what we are dealing with is this. While you are a part of the human race into which you were born, you are sowing to the flesh, and you are going to reap corruption even if you obey the Ten Commandments 100%. This is what the Master meant when he said to his followers, your righteousness must exceed the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees. Now, the scribes and the Pharisees were the two Hebrew sects that lived in complete obedience to the law of the temple. They dotted every I and crossed every T. They spent every moment in worship that the books declared. They observed every feast day, every fast day, every holiday. They tithed, they sacrificed. They lived up 100% to the Ten Commandments and to the laws of the temple. And now your righteousness must exceed that of the people who are 100% perfect. And it sounds impossible, but it isn't. Because he meant this. Not you must obey the Ten Commandments. If you sow to the Spirit, you will be obeying the Ten Commandments without even knowing it, without any even temptation to do otherwise. So we don't have to concern ourselves with the Ten Commandments. We have to concern ourselves with abiding in the spiritual word of truth. And this is a tall order, because it means, mark this, it is what you accept in your consciousness that is going to determine your experience. Therefore, out here, you have to begin with the universal belief in good and evil, and you have to be here to reject it and say, no, I accept neither good nor evil, because I accept only God, Spirit, as infinite all, and in God there is neither good nor evil, there is only spiritual, perfect, harmonious being. In the same way, right here, temptation, Satan standing in front of you, saying there are two powers. There are spiritual powers, and there are material powers, there are mental powers. you have to be the I of you. Has to say no. No, I accept God. I accept spiritual being as the all. I accept the scripture that nothing can enter God that defileth or maketh a lie. Nothing. Only God is God, and God is infinite perfection, and so there cannot be powers of good and of evil. There cannot be spiritual powers, mental powers, material powers. There can only be God power. Infinite, infinite, spiritual God power. This is sowing to the Spirit. It is sowing to the Spirit when you refuse to accept in your consciousness good and evil, or spiritual, material, and mental powers. When you are right up on top with the word I, and you say, no, I accept the truth, well, let's put it this way, too. You hear about good people and bad people. But you cannot agree on this. I accept neither good people nor bad people. I accept only the children of God, spiritual people. Now, I realize that in your daily work, in your daily business, in your daily affairs, that you are using double talk, that you are actually making concessions to appearances and talking in that way. But the point is, if you say to me, I am sick, give me help, and I say, I will give you help, I'm using double talk. But it's something I must do. I can't be utterly absolute and say, no, I won't give you any help because you're perfect. You will soon say, well, then I'll find somebody else who will give me help. So I make a concession and say, of course, I will give you help at once. But remember that back here, I can't believe that. The I of me has to be saying inwardly, no. The I which is God is me, and the I which is God is you, and there is only one power, there is only one presence, there is only one law, there is only one being. And by this time, you'll probably say, I'm commencing to feel better. Now, I have made the concession of double talk, and we do that in all of our affairs. Politically, we will say, this is a good candidate and this is a bad one, or I wouldn't vote for this one if he were so and so and so. But remember, this is only a part of, shall we call it, the human play, the human drama. Inwardly, we realize we're only taking that person humanly at their own valuation for voting purposes. But actually, we know better. They don't know it. We know that I am he. We know. And if we are not knowing that the I of me is the I of you, and the eye of you and of me is the eye of God, for we are one, then we are sowing to the flesh. So it is that in human conversation, especially with those who are not on this path, they speak of the weather, the climate, and germs, and all of these so-called human powers, And of course, we're not going to argue with them and sit around and try to show how bright we are or stupid. Agree with thine adversary. Don't start an argument with anyone who is declaring that it's bad weather. It makes no difference what you do in the way of lip service. What counts is what you are doing internally. I suppose a good illustration is with your children. There are loads of occasions when you have to discipline your children, when you have to punish your children sometimes, and probably when you get pretty mad at them. But be sure you are only doing it on the outside, not on the inside. I hope my children aren't listening. Inside, you can't accept this, or you would get nowhere. Inside, you have to be holding. You're only doing this outside for the idea of disciplining or correcting the young, immature thought that could not possibly grasp at one explanation this idea of perfection, and because of the universal belief, couldn't live up to it. One thing we do learn is that children aren't children at all. They're just ages. There's one-year-olds and two-year-olds and six-year-olds and 12-year-olds. They're not children at all. They're not individuals at all. They all act alike. They all are alike. They are a herd. It is only through your spiritual work and your training that eventually they become individuals. But left to themselves, they all act alike at the different ages that they are. Now, you can bring out a different effect with your children by what you are knowing inwardly. But in the same way, you can bring out a different relationship with your neighbor. You can bring out a different relationship with the people that you deal with in business. Not by acting differently outwardly, but by acting within. By realizing within the truth of their identity. Remember, they are neither good nor bad. They are neither sick nor well. They are neither rich nor poor. They are spiritual. And the spirit has no qualities. And its only quantity is infinity. But you see that to be sowing to the spirit, it means that you must be entertaining a spiritual awareness, have a spiritual understanding of the nature of God, man, the universe. You must inwardly know that the only law is spiritual law, and in the knowing of this, you nullify mental laws and material laws. Now, once you have raised the I in yourself, so that you have this I up here that does not accept appearances, or accepts it less and less all of the time, this I is established within you that will not accept good or evil, but only spirit, will not accept powers of good or evil, or material or mental, but only spiritual. This I that you have raised up here, that will not permit a negative thought to get past it, this I now governs your life and the lives of those who turn to you. This I we have had with us from the beginning. We brought it into this world with us. But because of the world's ignorance of truth, we also came into the world ignorant of truth. And then what handled us and what has governed our lives and what now governs the lives of all human beings is a form of what we call hypnotism or malpractice. It is whatever it is that makes us see good and evil, hear good and evil, think good and evil. Whatever it is that makes us accept appearances at face value. Now, we can illustrate this . We go on the desert, and in front of us is either a great big beautiful lake, or probably this great big beautiful lake with a wonderful city built around it. Now, if you have not been to the desert, if you have not heard of this, you will probably accept that appearance at face value, and you will start driving your car toward that beautiful lake and look for a hotel to stop at. But if you are not ignorant of this particular fact, if you have been alerted to the subject of illusion or mirage, you do not accept the appearance at face value. You do not accept the lake or the city, but you instantly recognize this is mirage. Now, in the human world, where you are ignorant of truth, you are constantly being faced with sin, disease, death, lack, and limitation, evil of all kind. In ignorance of truth, you accept this world at face appearance, and you pay the penalty for it. If you have been taught, spiritually taught, you will instantly recognize that this is mirage, this is appearance. And the master taught, judge not after appearances, judge righteous judgment. Having eyes, do you not see through this appearance? Having ears, do you not hear through this appearance? In other words, you are not to accept appearances of good and evil at face value. You are to accept them as mirage, illusion, a form of malpractice or hypnotism. But above all things, never accept them as something that has to be healed, reformed, changed, or corrected. See through the appearance. Now, it makes no difference that you are going to meet every day of your life with material laws and mental laws and legal laws. Every day of your life, you are going to meet up with appearances of sin, false appetite, disease, evil men in government and spiritual wickedness in high places. Every day of the week, you can never avoid it. Don't think that you can go away to a convent or a monastery or an ashrama and avoid it. You'll take the world right with you. And the newspapers will shout and the radios will blare, never believe that you are going to get to cloud nine where you are not faced with appearances, because it will never happen. And as a matter of fact, the higher you go in spiritual realization, the more of it will be brought to your doorstep, because the darkness loves to come to the light to be dispelled. And sick people and sinning people and poor people love to come to those of spiritual light to pour their burdens. And it's right, it's right. The Christ says, drop your burdens at my feet. My yoke is light. Just pour it all on, because it's no weight to me. Why? Because I really don't have to get rid of any of your sins or diseases or lacks or limitations. I merely have to disagree with the appearances, not accept them, realize that this is a state of hypnotism producing an illusion, a mirage, and I must stand fast in spite of every appearance, in spite of every cry of pain, in spite of everything. I, within me, must stand fast. I will not accept it. I see through the mirage to the reality. I know that in God's kingdom there is not a sin, disease, death, lack, or limitation. I know that in the whole of God's kingdom there is not an evil of any nature. And I have to stand fast in that truth and let the appearances hit up against me until they break. Some of them break rapidly. Some of them won't break so rapidly. And a few just refuse to break at all. Why? Well, one reason may be that we as practitioners are not rising quite as high into heavenly consciousness as we should be. I will admit that if our practitioners could be a little bit more separate from the ways of the world, that they could do better works. But because we all have to live in this world and with it, it may be that we do not rise high enough in spiritual consciousness to do all of the works that we should do. And the other reason is that the patience will not yield. The patient usually has in mind the changing of an evil condition into a good one. And this blocks the whole thing, because spiritual healing is not changing an evil condition into a good one. It is really changing our consciousness. Healing is really the changing of consciousness, and sometimes we just won't yield whatever it is that is blocking us. Now, this is never a conscious thing. I never blame anyone for whatever it is they're holding on to, because they can't help it any more than I can help whatever it is that I hold on to. It is something deep down in our consciousness, and the answer lies in just keeping at it and keeping at it until the yielding comes. But you see, number one, that in infinite way healing work, we are not turning to God to heal anybody, because we would never acknowledge that God would know anyone to be healed and permit it to continue. We don't have the kind of a God that would let anyone be sick if it were within his knowledge, and we'd hate to find somebody outside of God's knowledge while declaring God to be omniscience and omnipotence. Therefore, we are not turning to God to heal anybody. We are knowing the truth that makes them free. It is entirely a matter of the individual called practitioner, rising to that state of consciousness which refuses to accept the appearance knowing the hypnotic source, the illusory source, and the nothingness of it, because it is not supported by a law of God. Always remember this. No sin and no disease is supported by a law of God. If it were, it would be eternal. Be assured you can never cure anything that is supported by God. Be assured that anything that has a law of God to maintain it, you can't break. And therefore, the very fact that we can break our sins, our diseases, and our lacks is sufficient proof that they never had a law of God. They may have a law of nature, they may have a law of matter, they may have a law of mind, but none of this is a law of God. And for this reason, any form of evil can be dispelled. Don't ever try to get rid of God's creation. You'll just break yourself attempting it. But never fear to try healing, regardless of the name or nature of the claim. Because to begin with, you have the awareness that there's no law of God supporting this condition. There is no law of God maintaining it. No law of God created it. God never made it, not for punishment. God never made it to bring you home to Him. God never made it to kill anyone to get them home. All of this is theological stupidity. Maybe they'll have a branch of that someday, like the medical colleges have now added a new branch called medical stupidity. Medical ignorance is the title of it, the official title. Medical ignorance. They have added a department. And the reason for it is to bring to light the things that Materia Medica has accepted, which they now know to be not law, not truth. And so one day we're going to have a department of theological ignorance to bring to light that which has heretofore been theologically believed, but which we now discover to be error. And one of these things that will have to be brought under the title of theological ignorance is that God called this beloved home to Him. I don't know, sometimes it's a newborn baby and sometimes it's someone 100 years old. God has reasons, I guess, for probably He wants an assortment. And so He wangs them with a disease and brings them. He can't do it gently. It's nonsense when you stop to think of it, isn't it? It is nonsense. It is true. We are sick and we die. It is certainly humanly true. But let us get clear of the superstition that God has anything to do with it, and let us put the blame on our own shoulder. It is our ignorance. Our ignorance, nobody else's. But if it's your ignorance and mine, it's only our ignorance, because it's a universal ignorance which has been handed on to us. Let us realize this, will you? You can undertake healing work anytime you like in the very first month of your study, if you will realize the basic principle that you are not trying to remove a disease or a condition or a sin or a false appetite. The moment you try to get into that area, you're going to be trapped and you'll have no healing. You are not dealing with a sin, with a disease, with a false appetite, or with a lack. You are dealing with an illusory appearance that must be recognized as having no God law, God ordination, God presence, or God power. You are not dealing with a condition, but with a belief in a selfhood apart from God, or a belief in a power, a universal belief. Again, don't put that belief onto your patient, because then you'll be malpracticing your own patient instead of healing them. It is always a universal belief. It is always a universal claim. It is never the fault of your patient. It is never the fault of your student. It is never the fault of yourself. It is a universal claim of two powers, a universal claim of a selfhood apart from God, a universal belief of good and evil. But the truth is I and my Father are one. All that is true of my Father is true of me because of oneness. God is spirit and I am spiritual. God is immortal and eternal and I am immortal and eternal. And this is the truth about the patient, the student, or anyone who has called upon you for help. Remember, you are dealing with an appearance. An appearance produced by this universal malpractice, universal ignorance, universal hypnotism, believing in two powers. But only an appearance. And you're not to get rid of the appearance. You can't any more get rid of an appearance than you can get rid of the mirage on the desert. You can only see through it and understand it to be a mirage, and then go on about your business. Probably in the moment of your recognizing it as mirage, the picture dissolves, and so with healing. In your realization of the illusory nature of the appearance dissolves, and then the patient says, I'm better, or I'm healed. In the infinite way, you are never giving a treatment to any person. Never be guilty of giving a treatment to anyone. You give the treatment to yourself. You are the one under treatment. You are the one to whom the appearance has been brought. You are the one to whom the claim has been brought. And you are meeting it in your own consciousness. Never touch the mind of your patient or student. Never enter their mental home. You have no business there. They are a sacred being, sacred unto God, and you do not intrude into the mind or thought of any student. If you do, you're either practicing hypnotism or suggestion, and you're meddling in somebody else's mind. Don't do it. That's no part of the infinite way. You never mention a patient's name in your treatment. You never mention the name of their disease or sin or fear. Nor do you ever reach out to send a thought to them. Never. This is a serious offense in a spiritual teaching. What you do when the appearance is brought to you, you go immediately to the eye of your being and wrestle with it until you have come to the conclusion that I and my Father are one and that this is a universal truth. You can wrestle with it all you like within yourself until you come to the point of conviction that there is only spirit. This is, I don't know if it's the only one, but certainly it is one teaching that does not permit anyone ever, under any circumstance, to enter the mind or thought of a patient or to address them by name and say, you are well or you are spiritual. None of that goes in the infinite way. In the infinite way, you are saying, I have a headache. And now I forget you and I deal with me. Now the appearance of headache has been presented to me. The appearance of sick person has been presented to me. And what am I going to do with it? Ah, Joel, you're not going to accept it for one single moment. You know better. You know that I and the Father are one. Joel, not the person out there. You know, Joel, I and the Father are one. You know that all that God is, I am. You know there is only spiritual law, spiritual being. You know there are not good people and bad people. You know there are not sick people and well people. You are dealing only with God and a perfect spiritual creation, and all other appearances are but the product of a universal hypnotism, a universal malpractice, a universal belief in two powers. If I keep that up with myself, eventually, oh, yes, that's truth. Then I am quiet. And in a few moments, a deep sense of peace comes, click, deep breath, something or other, and I know that truth is on the scene, God is on the scene, and that's all there is to it. And I have nothing to do, you see, with a patient. Now, they may call me or write me or cable me an hour later or the next day, and I may have to do it again. And if they don't respond quickly, I may have to stay with them for months and months. But the procedure is always the same. Never do I work through suggestion. Never do I work through hypnotism. Never will I enter the consciousness of any person. There are some people who cannot respond to this form of treatment, who require a mental treatment, or they have to go somewhere else for it. They cannot get it from me, because my object isn't merely changing their sickness into health some way. My object is raising them in consciousness, not by doing something to them, but by raising the I in me. And then I, if I be lifted up, you are drawn to that level of consciousness, but without my having to do anything humanly about it, about you as a person or individual. Now, do you see why it is necessary first to establish yourself in the absolute conviction that there is a my kingdom, a spiritual kingdom, and that nothing can that defileth or maketh a lie can ever enter that spiritual kingdom of God and his spiritual universe and spiritual man? You must first establish the fact that I and my Father are one. The conscious realization of my oneness with God, of my oneness with spiritual perfection. Then, from there on, I'm dealing only with a world of appearances. From there on, I'm not dealing with people or conditions. I'm dealing with a world of appearances. And the illusion here may be a lake, and the illusion there may be a city, but it's all illusion. And the substance of an illusion is nothingness, whether it appears as a lake or a building. And you will eventually discover that the substance of illusion is the same, whether the claim is a cold, a headache, a cancer, consumption, broken bone, poverty, unemployment. The substance of the illusion is the same. It's nothingness, the arm of flesh appearance. And behind it is the activity of a malpractice, a universal malpractice or hypnotism, which is produced by the universal belief in two powers. Be sure that you are clear on these infinite way healing principles, so that regardless of your background, you can separate yourself from them and not forget yourself and then go back and say, oh, I must uncover the error in you, or some other thing of that nature. The healing principle of the infinite way is simple, but you may not quickly bring about healings just through knowing the letter of truth. It is with working with it and working with it that you develop this consciousness. It becomes second nature to you not to take in the appearance as if it were a condition. That is when your healing consciousness begins. When it becomes second nature to you not to condemn a person. When it becomes second nature to you not to react to any appearance of a person, then is when your healing ministry begins. Up to that time, you are practicing to develop that consciousness. The consciousness that does not respond to appearances is the healing consciousness. The consciousness that is aware of the spiritual nature of creation and of the illusory nature of appearances is a healing consciousness. You work with these principles. You practice them with the tiniest claims. And always remember this. You must apply these principles with cats and dogs and birds. Don't think for a moment that this is reserved only for human beings, because you just fool yourself. Many times I have letters in the mail. I hate to ask this of you, but it's my cat or my dog, and my answer always is the same. I'm not interested whether it's your cat or your dog. I'm interested in the claim that you're presenting, and it must be met. And by meeting it for them in their cats or their dogs, later on they're enabled to see how to meet it in the human. Never, never for a moment think that there is anything so small, so tiny, so insignificant that these principles should not be applied to it, because I can assure you that in applying them to the small things of life, you help to develop the consciousness of undertaking the greater ones. Wherever it is possible for you to hear this tape, please study it as much as you can until I am able to have it taken off and brought out in one of our monthly letters, where you'll have it for constant reference. But as you know, it probably is a matter of 6 months before it can appear in a letter. In the meantime, if you can hear the tape, do it. Keep yourself in the atmosphere of this lesson, because it is so easy to come down here and get frightened at an appearance, frightened at a child, or frightened at a grown-up, or frightened at a disease. And it is only abiding in this so that automatically you can wipe it out this way. Illusion. Hypnotism, malpractice, an appearance, and The more you can deal with it that way, the better healing work you will accomplish. Thank you.